Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
It's our podcast about anything and everything off-road. Tonight, Ross is going to talk about a lot of stuff because I haven't done anything in forever. Mm-hmm. I literally just go to kid sporting events and sleep.
Yep. I don't go to kid sporting events, and thankfully I've been sleeping a little bit more. So
yeah, I shouldn't say sleep because I'm not doing that. So that was fun. Fun sideways joke there.
So what's the line? This is our show about everything, anything and everything off-road. And
sure.
Chris is in KC and I'm in the Northeast.
Yep.
Doing some rollover wrestling tonight.
Sure.
Yeah. So I will jump right into my shit. So press cars, there's been a bunch. I feel like we haven't really gotten into them much lately. We've had some guests and we haven't spent much time on the cars that have come through my house. We did talk about the Alpina, right? The XB7?
Yes. Okay, yeah. Good.
I would like to talk about that again in depth. I loved that thing. It was fantastic. So after that, I had the obviously very off-road centric Mercedes AMG C43 sedan, which in its prior iteration was a six-cylinder with a whole bunch of power, and it was basically like the C63 light. You know, it was the same kind of suspension and handling goodies, but with the smaller engine. The new C43 is a turbocharged four-cylinder with a hybrid, and it is 400-ish horsepower. And
what?
Yeah,
that's a lot.
It's a very high output for a four-cylinder, and Mercedes is very, very proud to say that it's got F1 tech because it uses the electric motor for torque fill when you go between gears so that the turbo doesn't have to spool. Well, the turbo spools, but the electric motor fills it in, so there's no lag. And it's one of those things where they took something that they had and said, look what we can do with it, and they put it in a passenger car. So the one I had was actually looked exactly like the car that's in this picture here. It was in that weird matte gray finish, and it looked great. Seats, super comfortable. You know, tons of ambient lighting, fun stuff. But for context, I don't like reading or watching or listening to car reviews of vehicles that I haven't yet driven when I know that I'm going to drive them, just because it's like reading movie reviews before you see a movie, you know, like unless it's a fucking, you know, Fast and the Furious movie or some shit where you can write the whole thing yourself. Like, you want to go in and not know what's happening, right? So I didn't read any reviews of this car or anything, and I went in and I was like, oh, it looks good. It's got all this cool stuff going on, you know, plenty of interior goodies. And I drove a few miles in it and then was like, my gut here can't be right. So I went on YouTube and I watched the Throttle House review of this car, and Thomas from Throttle House called this the worst car he has driven all year. And
oh, wow.
I am going to agree. It is horrible. It's not horrible. It's a good car. It does all the good car things. It's, you know, like it's safe and it's yeah. Well, we can leave it at it's safe. It's just
safe.
It is a demonstration in overcomplexity for the sake of overcomplexity, and just like they did stuff that they shouldn't have done, and it ruined everything. Like, I mean, first of all, the goodies of the whole thing, the power that, you know, are supposed to make it fast. Yeah, it's great and all, but there's no interaction with it whatsoever. So doesn't really feel that fast, and it's also so heavy now that it just like isolates you from any semblance of speed whatsoever. So there's like no difference between what you feel in this AMG car versus what you'd feel in a non-AMG car, because you're just so isolated from everything. And the powertrain is just fucking awful. Like,
really?
Yeah, it's a ton of power for a four-cylinder, but just, like, how many times on the show have we done the Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park? Like, they were so concerned with whether they could, they didn't stop to think if they should, You know, it's that to a T. Like, the electric motor and the turbo four and the transmission, it's like they were programmed by different companies. And, like, there is no way you can be smooth in the car unless you put it into, like, full kill, massive aggressive mode, which makes it just unbearably stiff. It's like, you know, when you roll onto the throttle slowly going away from stoplight and the vehicle's supposed to move away slowly as, like, in correspondence with the gas pedal position. This car doesn't do that. It's like engine, electric, transmission, all trying to do different things at the same time. And it honestly, from like accelerating from a stop on an uphill, is it felt like a first timer manual transmission getaway from a red light.
Gross.
Yeah, not good. And the ride quality around here, it was just, it was brutal. It was just like everything goes through your spine. It's that kind of jarring. And this car was $80,000. Like,
that's
a ton of money for, you know, for a C-Class AMG car that's not a 63. And yeah, it sucks because I love Mercedes as a brand. Obviously, you know, other than McLaren, Mercedes is my number one go-to F1 team. And I want to see the stuff trickle down and I want to see it create cars that are successful in that capacity, but it is just not a successful car. And I at least feel somewhat validated in saying this because I started going around looking at other stuff and was like, wow, nobody actually really liked this thing all that much. So swing and a miss there on the C43, which is a bummer because, you know, it could have been great if it, you know, if it was executed to a more than half baked degree. So, oh, long breath after talking that long. I spent a lot of the day talking in meetings and shit. So it's, yeah, it's been a long one, but okay. So
it looks fine subjectively, since I don't get to ride them. It looks fine, but
it looks fine. The back looks like a, like an Alpha, like a Giulia, which is unfortunately a little derivative because for so long, the AMG cars were so, there was the three pillars of German saloons, you know, it was Audi, BMW, and Mercedes, and they all looked like nothing else. And this new C from the back looks like an Alpha. And it's like,
I don't, the last two generations of Mercedes, I haven't been that big a fan.
Yeah, they're
not BMW. They haven't gone completely off the end, but like, it's just not appealing.
An XM drove through my neighborhood today while I was outside and was like, oh shit, somebody actually bought one.
Yeah. I got cut off by an X1 or X2 in traffic the other day, and I was like, I want a Ramy.
I had an X1. I had an X1 to cut probably a month back for a week, and it was a phoned-in money printer of a BMW. But it was fine. It was a fine car, you know?
Yeah, it did its job.
Speaking of fine cars, transitions here. So then, so the Mercedes, the Mitsubishi Outlander PHEVSELSAWC. That's the full name.
Oh, there's a lot of letters and numbers.
It's a really fancy name and look for what's basically just a gussied up Nissan Rogue with a plug-in hybrid powertrain. And it looks great. Like it's actually a really attractive looking vehicle from the front, in my opinion, at least. And my wife pulled in the driveway and was like, I thought that was like an Evoque, like a mini Range Rover. Huh. They really rebodied this Rogue very well. So this is a tricky one because on the surface, everything is great. You know, you get in and there's a big screen and it's got quilted leather. You know, it's a $50,000 Mitsubishi plug-in hybrid crossover here. And you know, and it looks like this. It's the most aggressive looking Mitsubishi since like an Eclipse, you know, because an Evo was only aggressive because of flares and a wing.
Right.
And, you know, it looks good and it has like actual presence for a crossover that size. And then driving it around in EV mode is fine because it's an EV. And it's got four different modes. It's got EV mode, save, charge, and normal. So I ran it in charge a bunch of the time because it arrived with very little battery and with very little charge. Sorry, wrong vernacular there. So I ran it in charge a lot to use the engine to replenish the EV part of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a $50,000 small, medium-sized crossover, and running it on just the engine alone, I was getting like low 20s mile per gallon, which is not good because I put 110 miles on this thing. So like, that's not great. And the engine just drones and drones and drones. But you know, this is for the person that doesn't want to dig deeper than I bought a plug-in hybrid at a low APR, and you know, and it's like comfortable and it does everything. It doesn't ask any questions of you. Like,
right.
It's fun. We drove it through a lot of rain, and when you would go over some potholes and the front would go over it fine. And then the back tires with the pothole. And if you're going around a corner, it would kind of skip a little bit, which I didn't like all that much. But given it was also an 8,000 mile press car, which in dog years is, you know,
times seven,
due for retirement. So yeah, so that was here until today. It has been replaced by the Nissan Altima 2.5 SL all-wheel drive, which is a $37,000 base motor Altima. I haven't driven it or put any miles on it. You know, I backed it up into my driveway, and the one thing I will say is that the backup camera resolution is comically bad. But you know, they
on brand for Nissan.
I'm not making this up. Like, the Frontier's backup camera's terrible. Pathfinder's backup camera's terrible. This isn't a secret. Like, I'm not, you know, trashing Nissan here for unfounded reasons. Like, it really is a miserable backup camera on these things. But I don't know, sat in for a few and the seats are comfy, so yeah, we'll see. I'll put some miles on it this week.
I'm struggling to find an actual photo of an SL.
just pull up a 2024 Altima, that'll suffice.
They're all the SR version.
Yeah, they all kind of look the same. The SR just got get some like blackout grill. I think it even has the same wheels. So yeah, you know, it almost looks like an Infiniti at this point. But
a little bit.
I want to rag on the Altima because, well, I don't want to rag on the Altima. That's like the joke and the trope of automotive media today. You know, like the Altima is the fastest car on the road, you know, and all that stuff.
Well, I wouldn't rag on the Altima, the car itself. I would rag on Altima buyers.
Yeah, Altima buyers are the new Mustang drivers leaving cars and coffee. That's
the joke. Was the highest percentage of subprime automotive loans purchased. Yes. Nissan Altimas.
Correct. So I don't want to rag on the car because of that, because that's unfounded and not doing fairness upon the vehicle itself. And I, you know, kudos to Nissan for actually continuing to build a car. Like, we were just talking about Mitsubishi. They're down to the Mirage. They've been down to the Mirage for years. Like, I do, even though they killed, you know, the Maxima, like, they're still the Altima and they're still the Sentra. That's good. I'd rather that happen than them just be like, oh, guess what? We made a crossover between our seven other crossovers.
And the 400Z?
Yeah, and the Z. And they do make a Z, which...
So, fun facts about the Altima is my mom and dad went on a trip to Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and on the way back, the morning of their long transit back, they hit a deer, as you do.
In the UP?
Impact happened just behind the driver's side wheel well on her Subaru Ascent, and then the deer decided to like cartwheel down the side. Luckily didn't break any of the glass. They were able to drive it and keep on their long ass day home. But her courtesy car was a Nissan Altima Loner. Mm-hmm. And she had to catch herself every now and then being like, this is kind of a good little car. I was like, Mom, you are not going to stay in a car. You bitch at me all the time about seating position. Like, yeah. And she got her Ascent back and she's super happy to get back into it, but it served its purpose. It did car things.
Yeah. It's remarkable when, I mean, we're deep into this enthusiast world and we do things to our vehicles and with them and modify them in ways that make them worse at being everyday vehicles. And that's why when you get in like an Altima, it's like a palate cleanse and you're like, holy shit, like basic-ish cars are really good now, you know? They don't ask anything of you. They have all your tech. They're comfortable. You know, it's kind of wild spending time with a car that's just a car, you know? That's why even the Outlander was like, oh, wow, this is kind of good. Like, yeah, it's expensive as fuck, but, like, if all you need to do is get in it every day, start it, and get the oil change every 6 or 10,000 miles or whatever it is now, like, yeah, it's great. What's not great, we're recording this on Tuesday, October 17th. I was supposed to take a cyber yellow manual transmission Cadillac CT5V Blackwing to my best friend's wedding next week, which would have been a great road trip car, pretty much the perfect road trip sedan to go from Connecticut to South Jersey, in my opinion. And one Mr. Matthew Farrow was supposed to have driven this very same car on the Road and Track Hudson thing, whatever it is they do, their fancy Road and Track, like, event,
the Vines and Drives or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a California one. I can't remember what the Hudson Valley one is, but they're gonna do like Lime Rock and all the Hudson Valley stuff. And unfortunately for both him and me, this very car was subject to some body damage yesterday. So
it is called the Quattro Centro. The okay. Road and Track Experiences Hudson Quattro Cento.
Okay. Well,
I put an extra R in Centro. It's just Cento.
Yeah. It's a
400.
Well, needless to say,
400.
Blackwing was not attending the Quattro Cento, and it will, as of now, not be attending my best friend's wedding, which I'm bummed about. And the potential replacements to take this trip are either a non-Blackwing CT5 or the 2024 Telluride. So I know for this Telluride. Show's purposes, the Telluride is the much more interesting proposition. And
I think that's the more comfortable selection, too.
More than a full-size sedan?
Yeah, I really like the way the Telluride rides, yeah.
I just don't like
it. I drove engine. It off-road on dirt shit and took it on an off-road course. Like,
oh, man, I don't know. I put a couple hundred miles on one last year, and that engine is just like, it's fine, but it's like,
it's no replacement for what you were going to have, but of the two.
Less than half the horsepower. Actually, yeah, it's like a third of the horsepower.
Yes, so, and it's an automatic. But
yeah. So, so thanks to Eric for trying to line that up. And my heart weeps a bit for that car's well-being. So, yeah, so that's press car land. That catches us up since I think we skipped over a bunch of this stuff with a few of our recent guests.
Probably.
In the land of my Lexus GX, I finally completed and posted the White Knuckle Off-Road Rock Slider install article on Hooniverse. So please check that out. Again, White Knuckle was extremely kind in sending those over for me to test. I have not tested them on the rocks just yet. I hope to soon. And I continue to apologize for my stupidity and not exactly knowing how to read.
So, how to read.
Yeah. What to do with some of the components that were present, but I didn't know they were present because I I'm a novice when it comes to this stuff, and I have no shame in admitting it. So yeah,
it's a pretty solid surface.
Yeah, they sent me the ones with the tread plate that I think they call it dimpled tread plate, which is, you know, what those big old holes in the top are for.
Yeah.
And it has like a grippy-ish surface. I might end up doing a skateboard grip tape on it just for a little extra grippiness, you know, because it tends to rain here like 6 days a week now.
Done some of that this way. It hadn't rained in weeks.
Oh God, dude, it's not even, it's unreal how much rain we've gotten here. I think it was like the second rainiest September since like 1898 or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but it was a long fucking time since we got this much precipitation here, which I really hope doesn't translate to what this winter is going to be like, but we'll find out.
The El Nino maps I've been seeing, you're fucked.
I know. yeah.
Winter, because the above average stuff is north of me, mm-hmm. but all the cooler and wetter stuff is south of me, but it curves up to the northeast, the mid-Atlantic.
Moved. Yeah.
Yeah, the trough. I'm in the normal trough, and the hot trough is above and the cold trough is below.
Yep. You've pushed it in my direction. Actually,
I didn't do any of the pushing.
Yeah. So yeah, so please go check that out on the Hooniverse. And the scan gauge I'm going to install shortly. I've been talking to
a few.
When it's not raining, because again, my truck doesn't fit in my garage because that was short-sighted. But yeah, I've been talking to a few different people about different scan gauge mount locations. There's a company that makes one for the little vent that's on the dashboard right by the A-pillar, but I don't really like that location because if I get hit head on that direction, I'm going to get a scan gauge in my face, and I'd prefer to not get a scan gauge in my face.
You so you know the solution there. Don't get hit.
Don't get hit. Yeah, well, unfortunately for the world of driving, as everybody knows, you can't control that shit. So yeah, I'm thinking about a few other places, possibly like in the overhead cubby where the push down sunglasses thing lives,
mm-hmm.
or maybe just down by the radio somewhere like out of the way. You know, the ideal place for something like this, and the same thing with the phone and the same thing with any kind of radio where you have to tune channels or whatnot, is the least out of the sight lines and line of vision as possible. So if you need to check something, you're not just taking your eyes off the road. And this is like a common complaint. The GX is very space limited. It is a really shockingly small and cubby-free interior in the front. I mean, comparably, like a fifth-gen 4Runner is enormous in terms of like where you can put shit. There's a bit of engineering and whatnot that goes into it's creativity is what we'll say. 'Cause it's not really engineering. It's not that in depth and not that smart. So who knows? We'll revisit this. And hopefully by then the scan gauge will be installed. And hopefully by then I will have decided if I'm keeping this truck or not. I keep going back and forth, and I know, yeah, you see, so Chris just pulled up a picture of a 460 interior, and as you can see, there is little in the way of mounting places that aren't on the windshield or on the dashboard itself. So it's kind of like, you know, if you want to use that cubby, the only cubby in the center console other than the cup holders is in front of the shifter, between the shifter and the, you know, the like radio area. And if you want to use that at all, you can't mount anything down there. So I gotta get a little creative for a solution. But yeah, to wrap up the GX conversation, I've been flip-flopping again. I I relisted the truck for sale just to, you know, see if anybody was like, yes, this is exactly what I want, and I can hand it off to a good home and wipe my hands, walk away, and feel good about it. It's a it's a tough call. It sucks because I look at it out my window during, you know, work every day, and I'm like, I am not using this to its capacity in any capacity. And then on the flip side, you know, I do adventures with it occasionally, and I do have these, you know, big dreams and hopes and goals that are like true bucket list items of taking this thing out west with my daughter when she's the right age, and, you know, and being familiar enough with the truck and having geared up the truck the right way so that by then it's like a seamless, you know, integration of the family vehicle into an adventure. And, you know, growing up, not doing big adventures like that, but where the vehicle was a big part of vacations and of, you know, of our lives, because my, you know, my family, my dad made it that way. Like, thinking about letting the Lexus go is like, I have a feeling I'll regret it in a couple of years because I've already poured my fucking heart and soul into this thing. I have more hours working on this truck in the 2 years that I've had it than any other vehicle I've owned, regardless of how long I've owned it. So it's, yeah, we'll revisit this conversation as I bash my head into the wall to the point that my sanity has escaped and I just make a decision and fucking go with it. So yeah, if anybody has words of wisdom, please email me, message me, and do something and talk me off the ledge because, I'm losing it in my...
Because I'm out of arguments.
I'm out of arguments.
You sent a list the other day and I was like, that one. And there's like no discourse, no nothing. Like, let's talk about the pros and cons. I was like, pick what you want.
it's... I'm too neurotic to just let it fly, you know?
Right.
But that's it. That's my life. I will soon be producing some content for ATV.com and Auto Guide. So.
Oh, and that's part of your conundrum too, is the ATV stuff. Like the GX has to have a trailer. Yep. If you're going to always be having something around, a truck or something similar would be. Right.
And Polaris again has been super, super kind, and they've let me keep this thing around forever. And Can-Am, did I talk about this Can-Am? I think Spen talked about it, right? When he was on the show.
What Can-Am?
Oh shit. Can-Am has loaned us an Outlander 700 to test, which we will be bringing up to our local ATV club shortly. It is bright yellow and it has like the full, like, Canada windshield fairing going on. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, you know, like
a 23, 24.
Ooh, that's a question I don't have an answer to. It's yellow. It's a yellow 700 XT.
XT?
Yeah, they replaced the 650, which was a V-twin, with that Rotax V-twin, with a... they call it a 700. I can't remember the exact CCs, but it's a single. So they're keen to get some word out and some publicity out about that. And it's already been reviewed for Auto Guide, but I'll generate some stuff for Hooniverse with it. And we'll talk about it here.
I got a shot from driver's position with the fairing on it.
Yep.
All right.
That looks about right. That could very well be the exact same machine. So yeah, you know, again, I'm incredibly fortunate and privileged to, yeah, that actually might be the same quad that we have right now. But yeah, no, I'm so lucky to be in the position where I have, you know, press machines and press trucks too, because pretty much every time that I've gone on like a big trip, you know, an automaker has stepped up and said, here's a truck, haul haul the ATV with this truck, you know, for a story. And Chevy did that. The trip that we're taking that Can-Am on up to our local club in a few weeks, I'm hauling the Polaris up to ride alongside the Can-Am while my brother rides the Can-Am. And Chevy is loaning me a ZR2 HD, the 2500, which...
Nice.
Like, it's, you know, I feel like journalists kind of take this stuff for granted, and I'm reasonably new to the whole world of press cars as far as like the normal rotation of people go, and I keep finding myself reminding myself to not take any of this for granted, and that it's, you know, it's the privilege of privileges to be able to do this stuff and be loaned other people's vehicle or other companies' vehicles to spend time with and write about and talk about, even though, like, for them, these, you know, $75,000 for a truck is a drop in the bucket for a company like GM. But, you know, all that said, if the press ATVs were to suddenly go away and the press trucks and vehicles were suddenly to go away, what would I be left with? You know, then I'd...
A trailer.
Yeah, a trailer is easy enough to get rid of. You know, if I was in a pickup, then would I find myself saying, oh, fuck, like I should have just kept the Lexus, you know? Because I again, so fortunate to just, like, if I know a trip is coming up long enough out, I just say, hey, is there truck I can borrow? And so far, you know, because the big trips at least are infrequently enough for them to be planned well in advance, that things have lined up. So that's the Lexus dilemma. I don't want to beat this horse any further to death than you and I and my brother and my best friend who's getting married next week and anybody and my wife who will listen to me has already heard. So,
right.
Yeah. So that's that. So what is, now that I've talked for the better part of an hour, what's happening with you?
Dude, I literally nothing.
Nothing?
I attend youth sporting events. And then when I'm not attending youth sporting events, we've been doing a little bit of stuff around the house, trying to get some stuff squared away, before winter. Winter. So yeah, just little things here and there, but yeah, I haven't done. The only thing is there is something leaking on the Sequoia. I started to notice some driveway spots the other day, and I did have a CV boot replaced back after the Moab trip.
Mm-hmm.
And it is on that front of the vehicle. And I can't quite tell if it's a CV boot for sure, but like you see here, like this backside,
oh god,
there's a little dampness.
Chris pulled up a picture of what looks like a view up through a control arm of the axle going into the front diff. Can you punch in on that a drop? Somehow. Oh man, I can't really make out any.
Right, and so like
on there,
this is wet, and you can see this faint line on the skid where something's definitely dripping down.
Is it grease or is it fluid? It doesn't look like the axle's ejecting anything, at least not from this.
I don't know. I gotta get it looked at. So
interesting. You know, when you said develop the leak, I kind of just immediately thought it was going to be the LX.
No, that thing's just chugging along.
Yeah,
no problems. 15-year-old keeps driving back and forth to school in it. God, it goes through gas. It
10?
Huh? I'm not even doing the math because it's slightly oversized tires. Yeah. He's running back and forth to school in it almost every day. He's been roughing flag and tackle football games. So like he's been driving it down there and back. Oh. And he's like, I'm out of gas. And every time he tells me he's out of gas, he's just down at a quarter. But I did bitch him out about like not going below a quarter for like fuel pumps, cool, fuel and stuff like that.
You also don't know the accuracy of the fuel gauge of a vehicle that's was it 20 years old?
It is a 2000, so it's 23 years old.
23 years old, yeah. That, that fuel gauge, look, if it...
But, like, after having the 80 series and going to 100 series, it's pretty accurate. Like, it's not...
Probably fine.
So I am one of those people that I'm a little... I always reset the trip A meter.
Okay.
Every time I fill up.
Yep.
So, but I'm also a weirdo, and trip B, I restart every Jan 1. Like every New Year's Day, I go out and I clear all the trip B. So I know how many miles I drove that year in each vehicle.
Interesting. I feel like people usually do one trip for a tank of gas and one trip for oil changes. I've never heard of anybody do it for a calendar year.
Yeah, but like I have service lights that turn on for oil changes. Like I don't need a trip meter for that.
That is true.
Like you have a Toyota based project or product. Every time that service required light comes on, you know it's time for an oil change. So and starts to flash at you as you're starting to turn the vehicle on as you're getting closer and closer in mileage. Like
yeah, I haven't had that in this Toyota 4x4.
You haven't driven 5,000 miles in that truck yet?
Oh, no, I've driven 5,000 miles. It's just I've driven 6,500 miles in 2 years. So I've just changed the oil, like, when I feel like it.
I would say I would be in the same oil still. Like, it would not have changed.
No, I'm too paranoid and, like, in the weird world where I do keep this thing long-term. Like, you know, the couple bucks it costs to change the oil is worth the... Worth a peace of mind on the Blackstone test in 20 years, you know.
I guess. Suburban's Suburban's terrible.
Really?
It drives like shit right now.
Is that noise still there?
Huh?
It wasn't. Didn't you have some weird noise from like the leveling kit that you took off?
So the noise in the front end is the bottom bushing on the driver's side coilover. It's literally the shock is moving on the bushing and it's hitting the control arm.
Careful with those motions there, bud.
Nah, I don't care. Somebody can clip it out. They can make me famous for, jack off motions. That's fine.
Control arm.
But, yeah, it wasn't up, down. It was forward and back.
Okay.
But yeah, it's felt like it's been riding like shit lately. I've been looking up stuff to try and figure out like when MagnaRide shocks go, like what is happening. So it's still all held up by springs. Like it's coilovers in the front and then just standalone springs in the back with the dampers normally the way they are. And it's just, I have those Redesteins on it and I'm just not thrilled with them.
Mm-hmm. How many miles are on those? Better?
Let me get to my spreadsheet.
Yes. MagnaRide is talked about a lot on new vehicles. It is not something that frequently comes up on vehicles as the miles are put on.
I hear about them all the time that the shocks fail and they fail frequently. Yeah. Huh.
Especially
the GM ones, which to be honest, that's what was licensed by everybody. So,
well, I mean, nobody's putting 100,000 miles on a Ferrari with MagnaRide. So
I'm sure somebody has.
Somebody has. Yeah. Development drivers on the ring have, but you hear about them failing, but is there a normal serviceable life for MagnaRide or is it just
I don't know. I've been
totally
able to figure that out.
Yeah. That's my understanding is that it is a crapshoot. Like I know there were some people who had MagnaRide on I can't remember if it was Corvettes or Camaros or something or CTSVs, but they were getting not a lot of miles out of them.
Right.
And then some cars get tons of miles out of stock MagnaRide. So
the Suburban we purchased in April of 2021, we are now into October of 2023. So in April of 2021, it had 127,000 miles.
Okay, so you've had 30 months.
I am now at 188, about to roll over 189.
So you've put 62,000 on it in. So you're doing like 20 to 25,000 miles a year, roughly?
Yeah, okay. And the average American is 12 to 15.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, I
You're not average. You're way below average.
I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. There was probably a 3 or 4 year stretch where I was doing 35,000 miles a year.
Right.
So I'm averaging myself out. Is what's happening.
The Vredesteins went on December of 21.
Okay.
142,000 miles.
So you got 26 on them. That's
no more than that. Yeah, did you say? 46?
Oh, you're 188.
I'm at 189. Oh, so I've got 46,000 miles on them.
Okay. What load rating are they?
That's a great question.
Because if they're actually, it doesn't really matter. If you're coming up on 50,000 miles on those,
yeah,
in any capacity, like not many all-terrain tires these days are repeatedly in multiple cases getting 50,000 miles. I mean,
well, and so, but here's the deal though. Remember, I had to replace two of them.
You did. Yeah.
But that was, I only got 12,000 miles out of those tires before I replaced the two.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two new ones went on at 154. Those are still at 30,000 miles on them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I would talk to our friend at Vredestein and just have a conversation because that's probably the kind of feedback that they want. You know, because you're using the Suburban the way that a normal user and buyer of these tires would actually go about having them
right.
involved in their life. I would email him. If you want me to reopen that chat, I can for you.
No, I can. I know who it is. I got Roger's email. I'll definitely shoot him an email.
That's interesting. But yeah, that's
the road noise that's coming out of the driver's front tire is driving me nuts. Like I can hear it constantly. Interesting.
Is that the shock that you said the bushing's dying on?
Yeah, but the bushing issue is only like right when you move. It never makes a noise once the vehicle's in motion.
But if it is making noise, chances are it is moving while in motion, even if it's not making noise, which could be contributing to wear.
Right, maybe. I don't want to replace the bushing. I'm bored.
It's just the bushing that the coilover mounts on, just like the little sleeve like the bottom bushing. One? Yeah, it's a sleeve bushing that you put a screw through.
I don't know. I'll do full suspension lift on it before I'll fuck with that bushing.
Yeah, you need shop press.
Yeah, I don't want to deal with shop press.
Really, really, really strong person.
I know a guy named Ron who's really strong and has available tools. I just don't care. Like,
I want to see Ron just squeezing, like, you know, something to push the bushing out.
But it makes me look at Tundras with Michelin Defender LTXs on them all the time.
Yeah.
Getting thousands and thousands of miles out of them. And just be like, listen, if I get back to a quiet ride.
And the 75,000 mile tire.
Yeah.
You could probably get a set of takeoffs from a stock vehicle for like pennies on the dollar.
I'm not quite sure the tire diameter matching up with mine.
Well, you could fit.
Like, I know I can find an 18.
Yeah, but you can fit a little bigger than stock.
Right, but I'm not sure the freaking the actual tire size.
Okay. The Defender is great. My dad put another set on his Silverado, on his 2500.
Right, and
he expects to probably get... God, he's one of those people who very proactively replaces tires, and he'll still get 55,000 miles out of that set with, you know, a third of that towing over 5,000 pounds.
Right.
There's a thread on Mud right now that somebody was like, it was like a dissertation, like the Michelin LTX is the perfect all-terrain tire for almost everybody. And people are like, yeah, it's a great tire, but it's not really an all-terrain.
Right, it's not an all-terrain tire.
Shot yourself in the foot on that. You know, call a duck, but that's not a duck.
Yeah, I'm trying to find. So I've got tire rack's got a Tundra at 275, 6518.
Okay.
And I do have 18s, but I can't remember what I actually have on the Suburban.
Let's see.
Because I did. Oh, tire rack, you're not very helpful right now. Like, just let me search what I want without having to give you
If
extra
my
information.
computer cooperates, this will be an easy search. And I'm sure the audio listeners are so thrilled with us Googling right now, but it's late on the East Coast. We
So
can
it's pretty, so the Tundra size is wider.
How much wider?
What are tire sizes rated at? The 300 number, it's a millimeters, right? So it's 10 millimeters wider for the Tundra.
Okay, so that'll
Or
probably be
0.4 inches.
fine. Consult your local forums, but I tend to think you will be okay. I'm
Yeah, so I'll
looking at your
start.
UTV driver article. You didn't actually mention the size in this.
No, I don't think I did.
Okay, well, let's see if I can get a close-up of what you got on there. They're not bad looking tires, I will say. They like actually did a good
All
job.
right.
Very, very Blizzak sidewall-esque.
Yeah, I have a ton of. So the other thing is, like, I have Toyos on everything else, and they're great on everything else. I just don't want the road noise of an all-terrain tire on something that we really only put highway miles on.
So get the Michelin Defender LTX MS2. It's the one that's got the 3-peak snow rating.
Yeah.
Because I know you take that thing up into the mountains in Colorado and Montana and shit. So,
Yeah, and it
and
snows here every now and
it
then.
snows there. Yeah. I might still have Michelin contact. If you want me to hunt, I can hunt.
Yeah, if you still got that, I'll give it a look.
Yeah. Do me a favor. Message me and
I'll give you some tire sizes.
I'll just write it down. Okay, on that note, as we're just digging in the archives, should probably wrap.
Yeah. Let's see here. Those are when I was doing that. I
You don't
swear I
have your
took
tire
photos of
size
these
on your
things.
spreadsheet? Wait, do I have my tire?
275, 65, 18, which is exactly the Tundra size.
So then you know what you have to do.
I said 18, right? Yeah.
You know what you have to do.
I need to find Facebook Marketplace and find takeoffs from a Tundra.
Yep, some dude that was like, I'm gonna get
Nitto
fuel
Terra Grapplers.
HDs. Oh, fuck.
I said Nitto Terra Grapplers because my neighbor has them on his Sierra.
I had Nitto Terra Grapplers on my Avalanche. Driven a couple vehicles with them, including the TRD Pro 4Runner. And I still cannot get behind them.
Can't get by them.
Yeah, I just don't. They're squishy. They just feel squishy. Which some people like that. Some people just want everything to be a pillow or like a cloud, but I prefer things to actually. I prefer when
Dude,
it
do you
tells
know
me what they're doing.
how many freaking sets of 20s there are?
Mean, you could
There's
probably
so many.
steal a set of them 20s. But you don't want 20s.
Dude, somebody wants $1,000 for these. Get the fuck out of here.
Hell no.
To be honest, they're kind of fancy looking rims, which won't fit.
You
I guess
sharing
I
your
could put
screen?
the rims on
You see a bolt
the
pattern, right?
Well, so's the LX. Like, if I don't want to have the oversized,
It's so
I
funny.
could just switch to this.
You should get like Michelins for your son for the LX, just for commuting, and
And
then
steal the Toyos for the Suburban. Ay-ay-ay.
Although he's probably got, what, 16s on there? That's not fitting over the Suburban brakes.
Yeah, no, he's definitely smaller, yeah.
Ugh, I wish I could fit
16. I think I joked about that already.
You could you'd have to fit, like, GMT 700 brakes onto the Suburban.
235s. Fuck! All right, I'll do shopping later, so.
Yeah. So, okay, well, on that note, let's call it.
Definitely. You like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube. I think the show went live tonight. I think I got an email that said the show was live. So if you're commenting on the YouTube tonight, sorry that we didn't pay attention to you. The last six shows have not gone live. So the fact that this one went is just hilarious to me. Nope. No comments. We're good.
No comments. Okay.
Yep.
Could you say it didn't? Would have made us look bad.
Yeah. Nice. Thanks, YouTube, for finally working.
Fuck you, YouTube.
Fucking YouTube. All this shit. Anyway, Ross is not like the one from Friends. I'm at Overlanding Dad. Yep. We did a show. Thanks, guys.
Well, thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.